Welcome to Public Safety Talk Radio, the podcast for all of our heroes in public safety, including law enforcement professionals, firefighters, EMTs, corrections officers, healthcare workers, and more. This show is produced by the POCUA and is founded upon its Soundness Initiative.
This episode is sponsored by Police Mortgage. Police Mortgage is a full-service mortgage company dedicated to serving police officers and first responders. Founded in 2008, Police Mortgage offers a variety of mortgage products tailored to meet the needs of those who serve and protect. Police Mortgage, for first responders who are second to none.
I am Ken Bader, your host for Public Safety Talk Radio, and I have an interesting guest. As it usually happens, we already had fun before I pressed the record button, but let's see if we can have fun now that the record button is pressed. I have Jake Wiskirchen. I'm pretty sure I got that right. He is the founder and chief executive officer of Zephyr Wellness. He is a marriage and family therapist, and he's a national certified counselor. And I had the pleasure of meeting him at the Last Shot show, so I know he's going to have a lot of interesting facts and tips for all of our public safety professionals, and probably just for those folks that are owning a firearm out there. Jake, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Ken. I appreciate it. And that was a lovely introduction. You got your sponsor read dialed in. I'm very proud to be associated with such a high-level professional as yourself.
Well, thank you. Thank you. We're so professional over here at Public Safety Talk Radio. And it's also not my first rodeo. I've done a few of these before.
That's good. We have a podcast at Walk the Talk America, which I'm sure you're going to ask me about in a little bit, called Guns and Mental Health. And for the listening audience who's not watching on the video, I am wearing a Guns and Mental Health t-shirt. And we have stickers and all sorts of things, but I'll launch into that. But yeah, that's my thing. That's why I was at SHOT Show. We were with Walk the Talk America at the booth, trying to bridge the gap between firearms ownership and mental health care. And that certainly includes your audience.
Yeah, that's awesome. But I'm pissed now because I did not get a t-shirt when I met you.
I got a hand. T-shirts were not available then. I had this created by myself.
I don't have any freaking t-shirt.
Yeah. I'll send you the link. You can buy it. We have a store.
Now that's a typical podcast host and producer. It's like, yeah, we got plenty of shirts. I'll give you the link. You could buy one for like $57.
And 55, it's not bad.
And 56 bucks goes to whatever so and so.
Yeah, the cause, right? Yeah.
So let's get into this niche and this angle. In fact, I think that was the very first question I sent you, and it's actually on your website, which is bridging that gap between mental health and the firearms community. Yeah, how do you serve to bridge that gap? And, you know, even before that, what is actually the gap between the firearms community and mental health?
We are a suicide prevention organization at our core, but I personally, as a therapist and as a member of the community, I'm tired of talking about suicide prevention because it shouldn't get to that point. We want to get to what Mental Health America calls, you know, before stage four. So we want to get upstream from that. So the gap that exists is sort of what I call a self-imposed chasm between the two communities or the two cultures. Firearms owners, you know, when something tragic happens with a firearm, they blame mental illness. They say the person's certainly crazy. Mental health world blames the gun, and nobody does anything. We all move forward. So we're trying to bridge the gap with conversations, of course, like the one we're having now, but also through literature and invitation. So a lot of what we do is invitation to take mental health screenings. They're free and anonymous through our website. They're powered by Mental Health America. Everybody likes free, and firearms owners tend to like anonymity. And so it's a nice arm's length, non-threatening way to check in on yourself and make sure that you're ticking the way you want to be ticking. But then the flip side of that coin is also to practice what we preach in the clinical community by training up practitioners to be more culturally competent about the firearms community. So that takes the form of a series of courses that we host. There's parts 1, 2, and 3. Parts 1 and 2 are available for free on our website. And these practitioners, whether they be medical or mental or otherwise, and we've certainly had instructors take them too. What we're doing is we're teaching the fundamentals of not only what the gun community is about and the culture behind it, but also a little bit of counseling too. So it demystifies what counseling is for anybody who's interested. And it's not just for firearms owners. One of the things that I've found out through the course of this work over the last 4 years I've been doing it is the stigma in mental health, as we often refer to it, is not just about gun owners not wanting to have their Second Amendment rights taken away. It's for lots of professionals who don't want their command staffs or their supervisors to know that they're struggling, because sometimes that can threaten their job, it can threaten promotional opportunities, and so forth. So it's a much wider net that we try to cast here. And what I say every time somebody asks me, what is Walk the Talk America? And the website is WTTA.org. I say we're bridging the gap between firearms ownership and mental health care so that we invite gun owners in without fear of rights restriction. Because a lot of times I think firearms owners think that I have some bat phone to the government that I'm going to pick up and, tattle on them and say, "This guy's depressed. Come take his stuff."
You don't?
And we don't. As it turns out, I'm looking at my desk right now, and I don't have a phone. Sometimes I wish I did, because if it's a bat phone, I can call Batman, and Batman's just got cool toys, and I want to play with him and learn how to train with him.
Yeah,
But
he's just a
I don't.
regular guy with money, but go ahead.
I mean, I want his money too. That would be nice. It makes problems go away, or so I hear. Or maybe, like Notorious B.I.G. said, "More money, more problems." I don't know. So we are extending this invitation to both sides, quote unquote. And what we found is that because we are apolitical, and it truly is apolitical, we don't get mixed up in politics. We are mindful of policies, and we don't necessarily go into the policy realm, but we certainly have opinions about them. Like, red flag laws are very bad. They tend to be a barrier to care. Because we're apolitical, we can appeal to all stripes, and including the non-traditional gun owners, like the liberals, right? We got the Liberal Gun Club and the Liberal Gun Owners Organizations, great people, fully supportive of what we do. Lots of ethnic and gender minorities that come forward. Women are one of the fastest growing demographics in the firearms community. So we're able to hit everybody, and we can take the stage, as we have in many events and conferences and presentations, with the quote unquote anti-gun side, the people who want to restrict rights and access and all that stuff, and fit in really well, because we're also demystifying what their misconceptions are too about what it means to be a gun owner. It's not just the, guy with the belly over his belt, dressed in fatigues, looking like Duck Dynasty. So once they learn that and they realize
Although
that
there are a few of
we can really
those, but that's not the
there are.
majority.
It's not, and that's one of the things I figured out, was the gun community is really diverse, and it's diverse in many, many ways, not just all the traditional demographics you think of on the US Census report, but diversity of thought and opinion as well. And I've been a lifelong gun owner. I'm a firearms owning practitioner. I carry concealed. And back in 2019, when I met founder Mike Cedini on another podcast that I host called Noggin Notes, I was like, "Man, this is great. You got to come on my podcast." I said, but you can't tell anybody that I own a gun and carry one." Because I was afraid of my own peer colleagues and the stigma that I faced, right? So that was embarrassing, and I wrestled with that for a few weeks, and then I realized I had to come out of the closet and put both feet in the pond. So I did, but I was never really into the culture. I was never really into the community. My family's full of cops. I was raised around law enforcement. I taught the police academy locally here for a number of years, and crisis intervention training and how to handle mentally ill subjects. But I never knew gun people. And then I got to know them, and I was like, "Wow, this really is a different world that's full of very different people, and they have one thing in common, and that's freedom. They all love liberty." And so I was very, very proud to learn, and I humbled myself, and I underwent a lot of conversations and contact with a variety of people. And here I am now, still doing the thing, and it's free. I do it for free, and it's a nonprofit, it's a 501c3. And we truly are saving lives. There's been a number of testimonials have come through and said, "If not for your organization and what you're doing, I wouldn't be here today, or my husband wouldn't be here today," and so forth. So it's been really great. And we're trying to, like I said, to get upstream from suicide itself, so people don't get into that despondent state. And the way we do that is pushing out information. A lot of this stuff doesn't do any good locked up in my head. So we do things like YouTube channel and podcasts to get it out, and people can solve their own problems in their own kitchens and workspaces and not have to come through the door of my clinic. So it sounds a little bizarre. It's a little counterintuitive to say, as a business owner, that you want to work yourself out of a job, but I do, because it means the community would be helping.
Well, I hope you do. And I've had the privilege of talking to at least a handful, maybe a number of what I'll call suicide survivors. Some folks that were pretty close to that stage four that you mentioned. And fortunately, they made another choice. And most of those stories are, instead of picking up the firearm or whatever it was that they were going to use to end that stage four, they decided to talk to somebody. And sometimes that was a friend, sometimes that was a professional, sometimes, you know, that was a family member, you know, sometimes it was even a stranger. But that seemed to be what helped them to not be a victim of suicide, but a survivor. A lot of the things that you're teaching and helping people with, is that the first solution is letting people know to, hey, you know, talk to somebody? Or is it a, you know, hey, you know, watch out for this in your family member, watch out for that in your coworker? How do you begin to see the stages and keep people out of stage four?
I think it begins with relationship. If you don't know somebody well enough to know that they're off, it's not going to do any good. So you got to get to know people, right? And that requires vulnerability. And a lot of the firearms community and first responders are, you know, built, you know, as dudes, right? So the demographics are largely men. And so as a man, I love to say it's okay to be vulnerable. And the problem is we're not taught that. And so a lot of what I do is anchored by emotional functioning. And I have a whole video series you're welcome to take and repurpose. It teaches emotional functioning. We all have 10 core emotions. We go through them there. It's a natural response to whatever the environment is throwing at us. And if we know well how to navigate those and label them accurately, what we do is we learn vulnerability. And here's the key: through vulnerability, you get intimacy, and intimacy is how we connect. That's how we bond. That's how we get to know people. So yes, we do things like point out, you know, if your friend's looking off, then definitely say something, right? And also normalize that this is life, right? We're not supposed to white knuckle it through life, pretending that we're unaffected by things like breakups and job loss and death and all sorts of things that are unfortunate, but they happen. And that's a normal, natural part of life. So is your response to that. So we want to embrace that, own it ourselves, set aside and move on and not get stuck. And sometimes it involves talking to people, but I don't get hung up on that too much, because a lot of times you say, hey, you should go talk to somebody. They instantly hear professional psychotherapy. Right. And maybe they're averse to that. It's an extra appointment on the calendar. It's an expense. Maybe your insurance doesn't cover it, right? And maybe access is very challenging. I know that mental health has become super popular in the last several years, and there's not a lot of us to go around. And I push back on that and say, maybe you don't need to talk to me, certainly professionally, but maybe you don't need to talk to anybody at all. Listen to a podcast, you know, go download some Jordan Peterson and have some insights, or, you know, listen to our stuff, or pick up a book, you know, reconnect with your church, listen to some sermons, you know, reestablish who you are as a human being, find your identity, find your purpose. And that sometimes can just unlock things too. So yes, you want to talk to people. That's how we connect. I'm a big fan of, you know, growing through the tribe and relying on other people's resources and insights and awarenesses so that you yourself can grow. But ultimately, it's about being able to be vulnerable enough to say, I'm not doing so well and I need a hand.
Are you looking for a podcast to answer some financial questions? Well, then check out the Mortgage Beat podcast, brought to you by Police Mortgage, for first responders who are second to none. Mortgage Beat gives insight into the home loan process specifically for police officers, firefighters, and other public safety professionals. The podcast is hosted by Police Mortgage CEO John Aritos, who has decades of experience in the mortgage industry. Check out Mortgage Beat on Spotify today.
Now, I'll share a little story that I got from one of my clinician friends. He was working with a guy who's in the Army. He's an Army medic, and he tells a story about how they're on a ruck one time. Somebody twists his ankle. They keep going, and eventually down the road, a couple miles in, the twisted ankle becomes a big problem. And the individual who suffered this didn't speak up because he was afraid of, quote unquote, being weak, right? He didn't want to be labeled. He didn't want to be judged. But what ended up happening was he ended up becoming a liability for the whole unit. And so in our own personal lives, if you're dealing with something that's really stressing you out and you don't deal with it, you don't address it, you don't face it, you don't go work out and, you know, pump some iron or take a jog or ride a bike to push those neurochemicals through your body and process them, you become a liability to your coworkers, your maybe your subordinates if you're a manager, your wife if you're married, your children if you're not fully attending to them and being present. So we don't want to become a liability simply because we want to be tough or whatever it is. Yeah. Toughness actually in my realm means humbling oneself to know that you don't know everything and asking for assistance. Just like you'd ask for assistance, say from YouTube to build a deck you ask for assistance psychologically or emotionally when you just you're facing something you don't know how to navigate. That's what we're trying to promote.
Well, it's an excellent story, and you know, one of the things that I'm not shy about sharing with the audience in any of my podcasts, many of them know that I'm an alcoholic in recovery 3.5 years. And, you know, I probably could have been in recovery much longer ago, you know, but I fell to the same thing that you're talking about, which is, oh, I can handle it. I can take care of it myself. And was always afraid, okay, if people know that I have this problem, if I admit that I have this problem, I'm going to lose all my clients. My family's not going to talk to me. I'm going to get divorced. I won't have any friends anymore. And I'll just be living alone in a motel room until I drink myself to death. And when I admitted that I had this problem, everybody fell into one of two buckets. You know, either people said, you know, hey, you know, wow, you know, I'm glad you're getting the help that you need. You know, how can I help you? If you want to talk, you know, that's fine. Or another bucket, which is also okay, they just didn't care. Like, okay, great, you're not drinking anymore. You want to go grab a coffee? You know, it's not going to change my life that you're not drinking. I'm glad you're doing this. But there was nothing ever negative. And you know, to your point, and then I'll finally shut up with my ramble, to your point on being a liability. And, you know, you don't realize how much of a liability you were until something really happens. And about a year into me being sober, you know, my wife's dad passed away. And to make a long story short, it was chaos. And, you know, I became a very big support and help to her through what was a major process over like 6 to 9 months of making sure that her mom was okay and so forth. And I remember telling her, I said, you know what? 2 years ago, I wouldn't have been able to take this. I would have helped a little. I would have wanted to help a little, but I would have gotten frustrated. I would say, hey, this isn't my problem. I'm going to go to the bar while you take care of all this. So I would have been an even bigger liability to my wife, my best friend, if I had not gotten sober before that point.
Right. Absolutely. It's a great, powerful testimony, too. And the knee-jerk reflexive response is usually like, congratulations, I'm so proud of you. But like you said, it's like, that's cool. And I'm happy for you that you found your way. But we should be congratulating people on all sorts of accomplishments that they do that take some sort of humility and effort to ask for help. You know, that's I'm really glad you shared that, because in so doing, you can invite other people to come along with you.
Right.
As much as we denigrate what the Me Too movement became, initially it was very powerful in unlocking a lot of imprisonment from these women who were abused in Hollywood, right? So, you know, me saying I'm a gun-owning clinician who came out of the closet and said, I don't care what my peer colleagues think, there's millions and millions of people out there who need my assistance in this realm. I had to shake off some of that stuff. And now we've seen other clinicians step forward and say, thank you for doing that. I'm so glad, because without you, I probably would have stayed closeted. And that's a pretty cool thing, because through doing that, they can now advertise themselves saying, hey, I'm firearm friendly or whatever. And it takes down the walls a little bit. There's still some suspicion about what we do as professionals, and you know, whether or not, you know, it's a parlor trick or something, but it at least removes that barrier. Right. And you know, that's one of the fights we continue, which is in the policy realm. I alluded to red flag laws earlier. And if you don't know what those are, it's when typically a law enforcement officer or a family member can issue or submit a petition to a judge. And then upon reading this petition and seeing that it's necessary, the judge can order a protection order. They're called extreme risk protection orders. So just like a temporary protection order for domestic violence or whatever, this is a protection order that takes the guns out of the home. Now on the surface, you're like, oh, that's a good idea. Take guns away from somebody who's in crisis. The problem is, if you use guns for work, that's not an option. And right. You don't want to admit that. And the process to getting your rights restored in every state that has one of these red flag laws is much, much harder than having them taken away. It can take a year or more. In New York State, sometimes never. And now the problem we're facing is that states like Colorado just passed an expansion of their red flag or extreme risk protection order, or ERPO law, to include people like me. So 4 years ago, I wrote an article for the WTTA website that said, counselors cannot take your guns. Well, now in Colorado, that's not true. Counselors can take your guns if they submit the petition to the court. And I think that's despicable because as a counselor, that should not be my first line of intervention if you're in an escalated state. My first line of intervention should be, first of all, to de-escalate you, and failing that, I should call for a higher level of care. I need to get you to a hospital, not take your property. That doesn't make any sense. It's not even my realm to do that. So the fact that this continues to creep out is indicative of the lack of understanding, the total ignorance, sometimes willful, on behalf of policymakers who think that they're doing something right, but really they're hindering. And now we're having an emerging body of research show that gun owners absolutely are afraid to come into counseling because of that fact. So we're trying to substantiate this and maybe make some policy changes. So in the meantime, what we do continue to say is, if you're in crisis, yes, you should give up your guns. Just doesn't have to be .gov. You can give them to a friend or a neighbor. And if you live in one of those states where you're not allowed to do that because of transfer laws and you got to get background checked just to borrow a firearm, then there's other ways we can keep people safe, like taking a non-serialized part, like a bolt carrier group or a bolt or a firing pin. And that little act in and of itself keeps everybody from becoming a felon. And it delivers a message that says, I care enough about you to take the most likely thing that's going to end your life away from you and out of your home. And that message itself is enough to say, you know what? All right. I may be able to go down and buy a new firing pin from the local store, but I'm not because Jake has mine and that means something to me. And again, it's the relational aspect. It's the community building. It's knowing somebody well enough that they care so deeply that you would no longer want to end your life and cause pain rippling across your community.
Or you could just, to use that analogy, change the combination lock to the gun safe for Jake, and then he could never get in there, and then he'll be pissed.
Totally.
That
Yeah,
was my poor
totally.
attempt at a joke, but
Yeah, no, it is one of the options. Unfortunately, in California, I learned recently from Laura Smith of the Liberal Gun Club, is that she and her husband, living together, have their own firearms stored in a joint safe. But if one or the other changes the combo, there's some legal opinion that suggests that perhaps they have now taken possession, quote unquote, of firearms that are not their own. So even that's off the table in ridiculous states like California that don't think these things through. So we're trying to do this individually, right? We try to get into the gun community and say, hey, let's look at this differently. Let's not worry about the laws. Let's worry about saving people and do the right thing. And in the meantime, we'll heal our own way. We don't have to rely on the external influences or resources.
Well, to circle to a point that you made a few minutes ago that I really want to dig into is, what if it's your job to have a firearm? You're a police officer, you're in some type of law enforcement profession. And I hear this all the time. I've had the privilege of working with law enforcement for over 20 years, and they say, I have this, especially today in most major cities, I have all this access to all this wellness and people I could talk to, but you know what? I don't want to lose my gun. I don't want to go through the channels at the department, because then I don't want to be labeled. I don't want this to come back around to me. Now, fortunately, a lot of that feeling and thought is really changing in many departments, but for some others, it's not. And even if it has changed, it hasn't changed necessarily with the individual that needs the help. So when it comes to law enforcement, when it comes to public safety, what are some of the issues that you're seeing, and how do you go about providing wellness to these folks?
Now, a lot of that is predicated on the apparent certainty that the person is well on the back end. And it's unfortunately in the litigious environment in which we live, everybody's looking to sue for some reason. So if you get an officer-involved shooting 6 months after you battle depression, you come out clean on the other end and you're no longer in care, the opposing counsel for the deceased is absolutely going to find that out. They're gonna paw into your internal affairs investigation and all that stuff if it's not, protected somehow. And they'll use that against you. And that's a big fear, because the clinician who does the discharging is on the hook, the person who does the assessment at the other, and there are very few of us that can do that anyway. Fortunately, there's a guy named Johnny Pirelli who's out of New Jersey, who's written a ton of literature on this, and two full books on clinical relationship between firearms and health, mental health care. But we need to bone up a lot more people to say with certainty and confidence that you can write the phrase, at this juncture, this individual is well, right? And we need to be able to say, I don't have a crystal ball, but at this juncture, he's fine, so that that doesn't happen. I don't end up as a clinician getting dragged into court over it. I could comfortably stand there in the stand and say, yeah, at that juncture, he was fine. I don't know what happened 6 months later. He wasn't in my care. So that's a big part of it. The other big part of it is the culture within the organization itself. The leadership that from the chiefs or the sheriffs on down through the rest of the command staff have to make sure that they're sending a positive message, usually through modeling, that says, stay on top of it so you don't get to that point. If we start to slide a little bit, we're there to support you. We have all these resources. Please use them. They will not come to me. I'll never know that you're getting a divorce, that you're struggling with alcohol, whatever it is. And then nobody else will know. You just go take care of your problem, just like you would anywhere else. And it doesn't just affect law enforcement and military. It affects airline pilots and, you know, plumbers and pipe fitters. You know, you don't want the guy out there who's doing a bad job connecting a gas line, and then come to find out he's, you know, the house blows up. So we need to push the message that, first of all, mental illness can and should be treated, and that it also can and should be overcome. It's just like any other illness. And I'm trying to change people's language about the idea of identifying with your mental illness as though it's your character. So you don't walk around going, I am bipolar. He is ADHD. We don't say that with anything else. You don't say, I am a headache, or he is the flu. So we need to
get rid
of that.
I am COVID-19. Yeah.
I am. Oh, dear. I can't catch that through the screen, can I?
Yeah. No.
Yeah. So that's a big part of it too. And along the lines of the language thing, we're encouraging the firearms community broadly, and some of the influencers that you see on Instagram and YouTube, to change their language away from accident, like accidental discharge, to negligence, because negligence invites responsibility. And if you're doing things properly and something bad happened, someone was negligent somewhere. There wasn't an accident. The cosmos didn't interfere. It wasn't your Sagittarius acting up. It was negligence, right? And to that same point, we want to talk about storage with regard to responsible storage, not just safe storage. Safe is a mercurial term that gets watered down. It's highly subjective. Certainly when the pandemic swept through, it lost its meaning because everybody's talking about staying safe. I'm like, wear a mask, stay safe, stay home, stay safe, get a shot, stay safe. It's like,
firearms put a bag community over your thinks, head. Yeah.
Yeah, put it back. Firearms community thinks they're some of the safest people on the planet, and they largely are because they practice safety so often. So let me say, are you storing your firearm safety to the couple that's in front of you with the angsty teenager in your counseling office? They go, yes, yes, of course, they're stored very safely. One under each couch cushion and two on top of the fridge. It's like, okay, you may be defensively safe in case ISIS kicks in your window at 3 a.m., but is that responsible? And the way we define responsibility is preventing unauthorized access. Your teenager, when he's angsty, is not authorized to access those firearms. I don't care how often you go to the range or what he shoots when he goes out and tackles the elk. He's not, you're not storing responsibly if he has access in a time of crisis. And sometimes neither are you. It may be nothing to do with mental illness. It may be your gout flaring up and you're just in so much pain you want to end your own life, right? At that point, you have to be savvy enough to say, I should not be authorized to access these. So how do I responsibly store my guns? Maybe it's asking your spouse. Maybe it's asking your neighbor. Maybe it's storing them at a local shop, because that's a new thing now too. Lots and lots of states are doing a gun shop project where the shops will take your firearms in, no questions asked. Sometimes you'll still have to get a background check to get them back. But the idea is that you're separated in that time of crisis until you're no longer in the crisis, and then you can go back and return to them. So, you know, responsible storage, negligence, you know, let's get rid of the word safety. Let's get rid of the word accident. Let's stop identifying ourselves as our illnesses and handle this stuff a little more loosely and with a lot less rigidity. Mm-hmm. And I understand there's people out there who are hearing me talking and be like, I still don't trust you because I don't know you. And that's fine. That's fine. I totally get that. I was giving my elevator pitch to some guys who are rural rangers or marshals somewhere in Wyoming, I want to say. And they're like, yeah, that's cool and all, but I don't know you. In order for me to trust you at all, you're going to have to come in, do a training, meet me individually in my department, and be on hand. I was like, yeah, you're right. I totally get it. You know, as much as my professional instinct wanted to push back, say, no, I'm trustworthy. You can hear me on the podcast, right? They still have to get over that hurdle, and it's a big deal. And it comes back to relational connectivity. If we don't relate to people, if we don't have individual relationships, you know, it's dead on arrival anyway.
Yeah. I think that, in all that, the most important question is, has ISIS ever kicked your door down at 3 in the morning?
Twice. It was really
Twice.
bad. Yeah, it
Wow.
was in back-to-back weekends even. Dogs were barking. One, although I will say that the second one, they targeted the wrong home. They apologized and left and went
Yeah,
wherever they were supposed to
that's
go.
nice of them. Yeah, they so they
It
get a
was. I
bad
didn't
rap.
expect that. I didn't expect that at
Yeah.
all. Some customer service, as ISIS goes.
Well, getting back into serious mode, one question I had for you, which surprisingly, I haven't asked any of my other professionals that are either therapists or work with mental health and so forth, is define wellness. What does actually wellness mean, actual wellness mean, especially in the public safety professional environment? What is wellness?
I think it's individually defined, but it's you could loosely cast a net around it that says functioning to the point that you don't need assistance that would be distressing or would cause clinical upheaval, clinically significant upheaval in your life, right? So if we define a mental disorder by the book, and I'm staring at my book here, the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders, it's defined as any illness or syndrome in your life that causes clinically significant distress or impairment in important areas of functioning. So that's largely defined by the user. If you're drinking 4 beers a night, 7 nights a week, but you're functional, your family loves you, you're getting to work on time, and beer brewing is your hobby, that's not a problem. It may be a problem to somebody who looks at it and goes, holy cow, 4 beers a night and you brew beer for a living because they've got a different worldview. It's not a problem until it's a problem. And it's only a problem if the individual sees it as a problem. Now, sometimes the people around the individual can define it as a problem too. But I would say, if you're functioning and things are going the way that you want and you're getting what you want out of life and you're largely content and happy, and we can always be better, right? But if you're doing your things, you're well. And you're always going to need tweaking. I mean, you shed a few pounds, run a little more, eat fewer, packaged processed foods. That's wellness also. And so is spiritual wellness and emotional wellness, psychological wellness, even developmental wellness. If you're not growing at the pace that you'd like to because you set your sights too low and you've just become fat, dumb, and happy with life, maybe you need a challenge, right? Because you could be optimally well also, not just functionally well. So I think it's up to the individual, and it takes a large amount of humility and a high degree of insight and vulnerability to look at oneself honestly in the mirror and say, am I doing what I want to do, the way I want to do it, with the people I want to do it with? Am I happy? And if not, try to make some tweaks, make some adjustments. I think that's wellness. I'd love to get away from the illness model. Unfortunately, we live in a society now that's very, very focused on deficits and what you don't have and where you're not. And I'd rather focus back on gratitude and appreciation and counterbalanced with, what would I really like? Not what is my neighbor doing that I'm coveting, but what do I want for me? Get away from the comparison. There's a quote attributed to Teddy Roosevelt that says, comparison is the thief of joy. And I largely believe that. I think if you're constantly looking over the fence to see whose grass is greener, that's nice if you want to improve your own grass, just because you're like, oh, what are you doing there, neighbor? What kind of fertilizer are you using? But if you can't spend time in your own yard because you're too neurotically obsessed with everybody else's possessions or their grass or whatever it is, that's probably an issue too. So, we want to endeavor to look deep within ourselves and be honest about where we want to be.
Well said. And for the record, grass annoys me out here in California. We're in a desert, for Pete's sake. So you shouldn't have grass. I look down on my neighbors when they have grass instead of succulents or something. But anyhow, is this in recording? Is this going to be there? Anyhow, moving along to one of the things that you said earlier. Because I want to get into your podcast as well, is sometimes you don't necessarily need to speak to somebody, but you need to do something different. Listen to a podcast, read something. For folks out there, tell them how to find your podcast and how that may help some of the folks out there that may be going through some things, and maybe they don't even know exactly what they're going through, but listening to your podcast could help a little bit.
I'll give you a handful of resources. One is the Walk the Talk America podcast called Guns and Mental Health, and it's available anywhere. And that's a good one. So for the first 3 years that Mike and I did the podcast, we were interviewing members of the firearms community and talking about their journeys, their opinions, their insights, their awarenesses, and their trials and tribulations, their traumas, right? And that was cool, and it generated a lot of traction. Well, recently we've pivoted because we now have four gun owning clinicians on our board, and the four of us now sit around and we talk clinical stuff. Because in my experience doing other people's shows, doing our own show, doing presentations, going to conferences and conventions, the gun owning crowd is way more interested in psychological angles of things than they are hearing somebody else's story. Stories are great. They definitely create camaraderie and validation, but learning the tips and tricks and insights is much more valuable, and it's usually more intriguing too. So we've shifted directions. We still do our interviews from time to time, but the four clinicians, we're going through some of the stuff we learned in graduate school and just teaching it to people. Like, this is how you learn about yourself. This is some stuff you can implement. And then we're crossing it over with firearms, saying this applies to the gun community in this and such way. And it's really cool. So that's one thing. The Noggin Notes podcast that I mentioned earlier is another one that I've had for several years now. And it's truly international, which is very cool. It's something I'm very proud to be a part of. So there's three. There's mine, which is the OG Noggin Notes, and then there's Noggin Notes Africa and Noggin Notes Cambodia. And that's because the founder of Noggin Notes, which has now become a consultation company, it started out as an app with a podcast in it, but he's a consultation person down in Cambodia, and he's originally from South Africa. So through his networks across many countries, we've been able to reach a lot of people, largely in those areas of the world that have no knowledge of psychology or emotional functioning at all, because it's just not part of their culture. But the youth in those cultures are connected through the interwebs to the West, where all this stuff is talked about, mental health and mental wellness and all that stuff. And they're asking questions of the adults, and the adults don't know how to answer them. So Sifiso Rapinga, who is the founder, he's done a really good job down in the Southeast Asia and his home area of South Africa to bring this message to other people. So Noggin Notes is a really cool one. I really enjoy all the interviews I've had with people across the world and domestically. And then the last two resources I'll give you are my company's website, which is Zephyr Wellness, Zephyr Wellness.org, ZephyrWellness.org. We have got a bank of media on there. We have a YouTube channel, but the one I want to point everybody to is if you go in and search emotional functioning, my emotional functioning series will pop up. It's just me in front of a whiteboard talking about, fundamentals of neuroscience. But that's really, really critical. If you know what your emotions are doing, you can respond better to them, embrace them, own them, improve your communication skills, improve your boss-employee relationships, improve your parenting, your marriages, all sorts of stuff. So that's one. And then the last one is my good friend and mentor, Christian Conti. His last name is spelled Conte. He's got a phenomenal YouTube channel. You can poke around there and listen to what he has to say. But he's got a book called Walking Through Anger, and it's a little less about anger and more about his yield theory that he developed, which is a way of meeting people where they are in order to improve communication, especially in this day and age where everybody's so binary and hyperbolic about everything. They're so polarized. So Walking Through Anger is a great book. It's about $18 on Amazon, and it's very digestible by anybody. It's not a clinical book by any means. It's definitely designed for the lay audience. So those things, the emotional functioning video series, Walking Through Anger, the two podcasts, Noggin Notes and Guns and Mental Health, I think are great ways to just start the trek. And then, of course, the free and anonymous mental health screenings, which are available at WTTA.org.
Awesome. Well, that's a ton of resources out there. I'm thinking of checking out a few of them myself for my own optimization, as you kind of put it. Jake, I could talk to you for another hour, but you've got people to help. Is there a tip or maybe a couple of pieces of advice to close with for some of those folks that may be listening or watching and say, I just need a little something or whatever. Is there a tip for those folks out there?
I have recently started repeating these three words to everybody that I come in contact with, and I think they really resonate well. Transparency, consistency, authenticity. If you can do that and you can be a reasonably functional human being while doing it, you're going to end up creating a lot more value and rapport in your life with the people you interact with. Transparency. So, be honest. Consistency. Try to be the same person all the time across all domains. Same Jake you get in the counseling offices, the same Jake you see coaching his kids at baseball, same one at church, whatever. And then authenticity. And I think that's the hard one because it requires both vulnerability and humility to look at yourself and reach deep and say, what else could I be? And there's a two edges to that sword there. One is you could be really terrible. The other is you could be really awesome, and both exist within you. So acknowledging that you can do terrible, you acknowledge it, you set aside and say, I choose not to, I choose to be awesome. And so you start to actualize your potential if you can be as authentic as possible. And the cool thing about that is that's a never ending journey. I happen to believe, like Carl Jung, who's a big name in our field, wrote extensively about that the human being is divine in his or her creation. And if you're really of the divine, then there is no limit to what you can become, which makes it really exciting because it's a never-ending journey to find out who you are. And all you can do is keep getting better and better and better until you reach death and then you approach God. So I'm never going to be one to say that there's an arrival point at knowing who you are and being fully authentic, because then you would be God, and I'm not arrogant enough to think that. So authenticity, transparency, consistency.
That's awesome. That's a great way to wrap up. Great way to close. Jake, I really appreciate what you're doing out there. And really appreciate that you took some time with us today.
It's always my pleasure to sit down and do these things because, like I said, this information doesn't do any good locked up in my head. The more people we can get it out to, the better off everybody is. And I'm not kidding. I would work myself out of a job if it meant that the whole community is happy and healthy and nobody's getting bullied on the playground or yelling at each other in the grocery store. We don't have any homicides or suicides. Then if I still have lease terms on this building to pay, I will convert it into a coffee shop and pay that lease. And I will be glad to do it. I don't need to be a therapist.
There you go. There you go. Well, as much as I would hope that you do work yourself out of a job, I don't think that's going to happen in your lifetime or mine. So I appreciate what you're doing. Thank you again for spending some time with us today. And thank you for all of you who've either watched or listened to this episode of Public Safety Talk Radio. And we'll be back with you next week with another great guest.
Public Safety Talk Radio is produced by the POCUA. POCUA is a consortium of financial institutions serving law enforcement as well as other first responders and public safety professionals. To learn more about our association and to find one of our credit unions or service providers near you, go to www.policecreditunions.com. And always remember, if you aren't working with one of our POCUA credit unions, you're just banking with an institution that just so happens to serve first responders. As a public safety professional, you and your family deserve better. Find a POCUA credit union today.